2.46. Yavanarthaudapane
Yavanarthaudapane
Sarvata Samplutaudake
Sarvata Samplutaudake
Tavan Sarveshu Vedeshu
Tavan Sarveshu Vedeshu
Brahmanasya Vijanataha
Brahmanasya Vijanataha.
So Udyavan Artha Udapane. Artha means purpose. Udapane means a well. Whatever purpose is served by a well, sarvataha samplut odake. So udaka means water. Samplut means everywhere. So when water flows everywhere, as in a river or as in a flood, when that happens, at that time, tavan sarveshu vedeshu. So at that time, just like whatever purposes might have been served by a well are all served by a river. Similarly, whatever purposes are served by Vedas are all served by Brahmanasya Vijanataha. So the word Brahmanasya Vijanata can mean two meanings. It can mean a Brahmana who knows the purpose of the Vedas, or it can also mean a one who knows Brahman. Because the ultimate purpose of the Vedas is to know Brahman. So Brahmanasya Vijanataha can mean a knowing Brahman or a knower of Brahman. Either way, it's the same thing. So, here why is Krishna telling this? Because in the ancient times, the Vedic culture was very much valued. And following the Vedas was considered very important. So, now when Krishna tells Arjuna to go beyond the Vedas, this Traigunyo Bhavagina, Traigunyo Vishayavya. So, he says, won't I lose anything if I go beyond the Vedas? That means I don't follow the Vedas, I follow something higher. But won't I lose something by that? That is the question Arjuna's mind. Krishna says, no. Whatever you might have got by the Vedas, you will get that and more. So there are different Vedic scriptures for different prescriptions. Okay, if you don't have a child, son, you can well do this. If you don't have wealth, you can do this. If you don't have health, you can do this. But all these can offer us small, small quantities of happiness. However, the fulfillment of our heart's longing for devotion, when our longing for devotion is fulfilled, at that time we get a far greater happiness. Now there is a saying, more tears are sought because of prayers that are fulfilled than prayers that are unfulfilled. More tears are shed because of fulfilled prayers than because of unfulfilled prayers. Can you give an example for this? Who sought more tears because of fulfillment of prayers than of unfulfilled prayers? Chitraketu Maharaj. It's actually a very profound point. More tears are shed because of fulfilled prayers than because of unfulfilled prayers. That is, I pray for something and it doesn't happen only. I feel so bad about it. Oh, God did not fulfill my prayer and I shed tears. But when I pray for something and it gets fulfilled, and after that also it creates so many complications. It creates so much, especially if I get a pleasure and then I lose it, then there is so much misery because of that. So often, especially when there is a material conception of religion, one is asking for material things from God, at that time more tears are shed because of fulfilled prayers than unfulfilled prayers. So here Krishna is telling that even if you feel, O Arjuna, that you will lose something, don't worry. You will not lose anything because you will gain something much higher. And when you gain that higher thing, then you won't feel the loss of anything lower. So in this section, from 40 to 46, which are 7 verses, so essentially what has Krishna compared? He has compared Karma Kanda and Karma Yoga. So now, let us move forward. Now after comparing Karma Kanda and Karma Yoga, what are the salient points of comparison here? temporary versus eternal. At the first comparison. Within modes versus beyond modes. For less intelligent people versus more intelligent people. Requires, okay, same thing, let's say we have some more intelligent. So Krishna has compared Karma Kanda versus Karma Yoga and it gives small results like a well versus complete results like a river. So, in the traditional Indian society, purity was considered important. Just like in our deity rooms, you know, if we have a sink in the kitchen, we will use it for washing the vessel that I use for cooking. But normally we will not use it for washing our own contaminated vessels. And certainly we won't use the kitchen sink for, say, bathing and cleaning up after responding to nature. You won't use it for washing clothes. So there is a standard of purity by which different things are used for different purposes. Similarly, different wells are used for different purposes. Certain wells are for bathing, certain wells are for washing utensils, certain wells are reserved only for the deity paraphernalia, like washing and things like that. So, but when we come to a river, because the river water is constantly flowing, river is considered pure. And everything can be done in the river. Because that one river can fulfill everything. Similarly, Krishna is saying, once you know the ultimate purpose of the Vedas, and all purposes will be fulfilled. Now, till now, Krishna has been a little enigmatic. He has not yet told what is the ultimate purpose and how it is fulfilled. He has given some hints into point 15, he says, Amruttvaya Kalpate, that you attain eternity. Then into point 39, he says that, you will not only become free from papa, but you will get no karmic bondage. But what ahead of that? What ahead of that he has not yet told. So now, we come to one of the most misused verses of the Bhagavad Gita. कर्मण्येवाधिकारस्ते मा फलेषु कदाचन मा कर्मफलहेतुर्भूर्मा ते संगोस्तु कर्मणि. एक्चुअली इफ somebody wants to use this verse for simplistically justifying work is worship, the first fragment of the verse is good. Karmanneva adhikaras, you have a right to do your work. But if you look at the full verse, it is actually profoundly confusing. Four points are being said in this verse. For each line is actually saying this distinct point. Karmanneva adhikaras, you have a right to do your work. Ma phaleshu kadachi. So the next three lines are ma, not. You don't have a right to the fruits. This itself is quite antithetical to the modern mentality. People expect, I have a right to the fruits and I don't want the work. Isn't it? This is the whole idea of gambling or playing around in the stock market, or now even they have gambling with the sort of cricket matches. The idea is that those who are gambling in match fixing or whatever, they are not actually doing any work. The idea is, I don't want any work and I want the result. So the modern mentality is exactly opposite. Or if at all I have to do work, let me do the least work and get the maximum result. What Krishna seems to say exactly opposite. You can do, you have right to work, but no right to the result. And then, you know, in some situations, we may accept that also. For example, if we are a part of a team, and when the team wins, we may not be celebrated as a champion, but we know we contributed to it. So So I don't get the direct result. But there are some situations in life where even if the material result is not coming, the joy of having contributed, the joy of being having been a part of something wonderful. Many people do some selfless work. That means they will do some social service or charitable cause. And they feel, yes, you know, I felt I did something worthwhile in my life. So Krishna is saying third line, Maha Karma Phala Hetu Rupo. Don't think that you are the cause of the result. First thing is you don't have a right to the result. Second is you don't have a right to even thinking that you are the cause of the result. Now if somebody thinks like that, okay, imagine that I do a work, nobody is going to pay me for it, and nobody is going to glorify me for it, and I am not allowed to think that you did the work. Then why should I do the work? And last language is Mate Sangostva Karmani. You cannot be attached to inaction. Don't become attached to inaction. So what would be the logic of this? Now, certainly Krishna is not telling here, don't bother about the result. Actually, if Krishna were not bothered about the result, then Krishna would not be trying to persuade Arjuna to fight. Isn't it? Krishna is concerned about the war and he is concerned about the result. Obviously, that's why he's there. So, there is a difference between not being concerned about the result and not being attached to the result. The two are different things. I'll explain this. In this, not equal to, is there some way to do that? I don't think a strike through will work in this one. No. Okay. Being concerned. What is the difference? As devotees, if we are doing a service for Krishna, let's understand from our experience, then we'll go to the Karma Yogi level. So, we are as sadhaka bhaktas, we are trying to do a service. So, if say we are cooking for Krishna, then can we say, because I don't care for Krishna, because I'm not supposed to be attached? So I'll put salt in any quantity, sugar in any quantity, I'll heat for any amount of time. And that is what Krishna is expecting you to do. Obviously, that is not what Krishna is expecting us to do. So that will mean not being concerned. Not being concerned is not what is expected. So not being attached indicates basically that I recognize that there is a higher power involved in producing the result. But the whole central message of this verse is that you are not the only doer of the result. You are not the only producer of the result. So we have to do our part, but even after doing our part, sometimes the result may not come. But we have to do our part so that we strive to get the result. But we also recognize that I am not the final producer of the result. So basically this verse talks about the action with awareness of the human divine factors in the production of the result. The human divine factor means that I understand that the result will be produced not just by my efforts, but by my efforts and Krishna's mercy. It could be Krishna's mercy for a devotee, it could be the arrangement of destiny for one who is not practicing devotee service. But both are there. So basically, what this verse is telling us is that don't think that you are the producer of the result. Because we recognize that there is a higher purpose to be achieved. What is that higher purpose? Actually, if I am not going to get any result from an action, then why should I perform the action at all? Is there nothing for me to gain by it? No, there is something to gain. What we gain is if no result and no credit. So
the time now is 6:00 PM. Every moment is an opportunity to pursue my love affair with Krishna words. If I don't actively and aggressively hanker for Krishna words.
So if no result and no credit. So C refers to the third part of the verse. B refers to the second part of the verse. So A, B, C, D is the way in which we refer to fragments of the verses. 2.47 A would be Karmanyevadhikaras. 2.47 C will be Ma Karmaphal Hetu, like that. So 2.47 B and C, what are they telling? No result and no credit. Then what is our gain? Actually, we grow in wisdom and devotion . So there's a difference. What happens is we grow in wisdom and we grow in devotion. How does that happen? Even in worldly sports, people say that we learn more through defeat than through success. We enjoy success more. But when we are defeated, then we think, okay, what did I do wrong? Why was I defeated? And we learn more through defeat than through success. So sometimes, as students, the habit may be to just mug up the information and regurgitate it, vomit it at the time of exams, and get marks and go through it. And that will work most of the time. But that will not lead to the development of a trained and educated mind capable of analysis and systematic thinking. So in one sense, when I study, sometimes if I'm studying, some students may study throughout the year and then they give the exam, and other students study just for the last maybe 15 days and do the exam. And both may get the same marks. Or the person who studies at the last few more days, he may even get better marks. So from the point of view, the result, the student who has studied the last moment, he has fared better. But from the point of view of growth in wisdom, growth in understanding of the subject, who has gained? The student has been studying throughout the year. So here, the soul is in the body. And the soul is acting through the body to do a particular activity. Now when the soul gets the result, and the soul is attached to the result, then that action increases the bondage between the soul and the body. For example, if say somebody plays a cricket match and wins, then what happens? That win, the euphoria of that, increases the body's identification, increases the identity of the country or the team or the sport. And one starts thinking, I am a man, I am a cricketer, I am an Indian or whatever. So whenever we get a material result and enjoy that material result, that experience of enjoyment thickens the bond between the body and the soul. Now, if we do the action without being attached to the result, then at the first level, the action will not increase the bond between the body and the soul. But then, if I am doing the action without being attached to the result, then what will be the motive for my work? Isn't it? I was once given Bhagavad Gita course and I was explaining this Prakriti Kriyamanani. So I told, if we hear that we are not the doers, then several questions come in our mind naturally. So can you tell what are the questions that come? Who is doing? Yes, so that was the question which most devotees asked. There's one devotee who was known to be extremely lazy. So he asked, why should we do anything? If we are not the doers, then why should we do anything? But the point is, we will feel I will not do anything, but when the time for ahar, nidra, vaisu will come, we will have to do it. So when the time for eating comes, we will not do it. When the time for sleeping comes, we will sleep. So we can't just not do anything. So, who is the doer, we will come to a little later. But at this point, we have to, if I am going to do something, there must be some motive for action. Nobody will work without a motive. So, for a devotee, what is the motive? We'll move downwards from a devotee to a bhakta, to a karma yogi, because we can relate with a devotee more easily. Now, if you look at Srila Prabhupada's life, Srila Prabhupada, when he was trying to preach in India, he got so much discouragement. Sometimes we go to a place for a program and 2-3 times if nobody comes to the program, we feel okay, I'll just cancel the program. And if 2-3 times the program, 2-3 person try a program, the program won't work, then we think, maybe I'm not going to be a preacher. We should look for some other service. So we become discouraged. If you look at Srila Prabhupada, he was trying to preach for 40 years. And he got nothing practically speaking. And then he went to America. And if you look at America, his stay in America was not a bed of roses. Especially the first 1 year was a nightmare. When he first lost his tape record was stolen away. And then he was with that Mayavadi teacher who was not ready to let him speak. And then he went and stayed in the Bowery and David came and attacked him. So actually it was crisis after crisis after crisis. So then, the journalist who came to meet Srila Prabhupada, he writes in, I think, the newspaper, which is the newspaper, the Butler Eagle or something like that, or the newspaper. So there he writes a report, he seems so satisfied and so happy. So Churumala writes over there, actually speaking, from the point of the view, world, Srila Prabhupada is unknown. Unknown is just one of the thousands of figures moving on the streets of New York. Yet, from the spiritual point of view, he was completely successful. Why was he completely successful? Because every day, he was chanting his holy names, and japa was doing, he was every day doing the translation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Every day, he was speaking on the Bhagavad Gita to whoever came to meet him. Every day, he was cooking and offering bhoga to Krishna. So, his devotional activities were going on unimpeded. The only question was whether the world will take notice or not. So from Krishna's point of view, Prabhupada was completely successful. Because Prabhupada was doing everything that he could for Krishna. So that means in our devotional life, there is actually an internal success and there is an external success. The external success is when the service bears the result. The result that is expected. Say we arrange a program and many people come and people become connected to Krishna consciousness and they become devotees. That is the external result. So external success is material result of the service manifests. Internal result is our relationship with Krishna flourishes. Yes. service for us is an opportunity to develop our relationship with Krishna. So when we do any service, actually if you are doing the service nicely, then our relationship with Krishna will develop by that. Now relationship with Krishna is not something abstract. It means that actually we become purified with another class, our attachment to Krishna increases, we experience the reciprocation of Krishna with us, and overall we become more in one sense transcendent with the ups and downs of the world. So from the internal point of view, Prabhupada was always successful. From the external point of view, Prabhupada's success manifested after 66. Till 66, there was no success. So every time we are rendering any service, if Krishna is pleased by that service, and Krishna is surely pleased if we render the service in the proper attitude, then we are internally successful. Now most of the time, the ideal situation would be that the external and the internal play together. The external and internal go together. That means sometimes we say that the Bhaktisthana Thakur, they would say that the test of a preacher is how test of a Vaishnava is how many other Vaishnavas does he make. Isn't it? You say that. But then when Prabhupada was asked that, you know, there are, if you say that Krishna consciousness is the best, then why is it that so few people are coming? There are so many other organizations, other teachers, and millions of people are going over there. Then Prabhupada said that if you are selling a diamond, you will not find a queue outside a diamond shop. Imitation jewelry, you'll find a big shop. We'll find a big queue outside the imitation jewelry shop. So what does this mean? Now, sometimes the material result of a service may not necessarily contribute to our devotional advancement. Radhan Maharaj says that if we do our service nicely and if we get fame and we delight in the fame, he said, then you will get fame but not praying. You get fame but not praying. So what happens is, ultimately, it's our consciousness that needs to be developed. So if I do a service nicely and if I bask in the limelight and everybody glorifies me and I delight in the limelight, then what is going to happen? My worldly consciousness will increase. Oh, so many people respect me, so many people glorify me. And then where is my Krishna consciousness? And if my Krishna consciousness is not there, then where is the advancement? So sometimes the worldly result works against our internal result. Sometimes our obsession, our infatuation with getting the external result makes us oblivious to our internal consciousness. Somehow I will just get this done. And after getting this result, I want to have the glory for that. So what Krishna is telling over here is that you just focus on the internal result. Understand that firstly, you don't have a right to the external result. Let's look back at the previous slide now to understand this. That you don't have a right to the result. So, I don't have a right to the result means if I go for book distribution, actually it's not that I have a right to say have 108 books distributed in my name or whatever. And secondly, don't think that you are doing the distribution. Because what happens is if we think we are the distributors, then many times the next day we find that we go and nobody takes the books. And then we realize, hey, what happened? I thought I was a distributor, but then suddenly I realize that actually I am just completely powerless. I seem to be able. So actually, Krishna says, essential focus of this verse is the obsession with the result or the obsession with the doership. The two different things. One is that I want the result and I am getting the result. Both these thoughts, they distract us from our Krishna consciousness. And therefore, don't be bothered. Now on the other hand, the last option is there. Okay, you should not do the work only. But if you don't do the work only, then where are we expressing our devotion? Isn't it? So I do the service, that's how I express my devotion. And after doing the service, I also express my devotion by not being obsessed with the result. Surely we want the result, but we want the result for Krishna. So yes, when we go for book distribution, we want to have many books distributed so that Krishna will be pleased. But we understand that Krishna is pleased not just when books are distributed. Krishna is pleased when we strive to please Him. So even if the results don't come, if we have endeavored, Krishna is pleased. Krishna is pleased. And actually when we understand this dynamic of bhakti, then it is actually very liberating and empowering. Why is it liberating and empowering? See, external success is what the world sees. And we are judged by that which is not in our control. What is the difference? In bhakti, we are judged by that which is in our control. If I do my service with the right consciousness, then irrespective of whether the result comes or not, I need advancement. But in material life, irrespective of how much I endeavor, if the result doesn't come, I don't get any credit. That's why actually, if we understand the platform of practicing bhakti, then it makes us very secure. It's very secure and steady. We understand that every single action that I'm doing, it's contributing to my spiritual advancement. It's contributing to my devotional growth. And material life, only there are some important moments. I may study throughout the year, but the important moment is the exam time. And if the exam time I don't do well, then I'm ruined. But in bhakti, it's not like that. Every single moment that I am trying to cultivate Krishna consciousness, I am making spiritual advancement. There may be certain important moments. Certain important moments, say we have to give an important class, or we have to go for an important service. But it is not that those moments are make or break. In material life, certain moments are make or break. But in devotional life, there is no make or break. Every moment we are making advancement, Certain moments are more important than others from a material point of view. But all moments are contributing to the growth of our relationship with Krishna. And that's why Harishavari Prabhupada, those who are close to Prabhupada, they said actually Prabhupada would preach with the same enthusiasm, whether he was preaching to 1,000 people or whether he was just sitting in his room and talking with a few guests. Because Prabhupada was preaching for Krishna's pleasure. So that's how this verse is telling us, don't let the obsession with the external success distract you from the internal success. So now, one more point and then we'll move to the next verse after this. Is the question, is external success a reflector of internal success? That means that as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, that the greatness of a Vaishnava is known by how many other Vaishnavas he has been. So can we go the other way and say that, oh, this person has made so many devotees, that means he must be a great devotee? It is not necessary. See, if A leads to B, that doesn't mean when B is present, A has to be present. So logically speaking, if A leads to B, then if B is present, then we can say A is present only when A is the only cause of B. Is it clear? It's logic. It should be simple logic. See, what is happening here? If A leads to B, So if B occurs, then must A have occurred? It's only if A is the only cause of B. If A is the only cause of B, then you can say that when B is present, A must be present. That means what? That somebody gets very good marks in exams. So, if a student, assume this is simple equality, if a student studies nicely, gets good marks in the exam. Somebody has got very good marks in the exam. Therefore, he must be a good student. Is that true? No, there can be other causes, isn't it? The other cause can be, maybe he has copied, maybe it was just a lucky gambit, he studied a little bit and the same thing came in the exam, or maybe he bribed the teacher, or whatever. There are so many possibilities. So, if A leads to B, then that doesn't mean when B is present, A has to be present. So what Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur is telling is that the test of a Vaishnava is known by how many other Vaishnavas are there. If a Vaishnava is truly devoted to Krishna, he will be able to preach and make many other devotees. But just because somebody is preaching successful, that doesn't mean he is a great Vaishnava. Why? Because this success in getting many followers, that can have also a material cause. What is the material cause? Somebody by that person, by their own past good karma, is destined to become famous and have fans and followers. So, what is happening is, that is happening now within the ambit of devotional service. That person became a devotee. That person's past good karma brings a reaction in the ambit of devotional service. Therefore, it doesn't necessarily mean that just because a person is getting a lot of followers, that doesn't mean he's a great devotee. So, what should be the ideal situation? That so now we are discussing this question. This is put in this bracket. So is external success a reflector of internal success? Yes, if it is built on internal success. No, if it is a substitute for internal success. What does it mean? Yes, if it is built on internal success means that actually I have a well-developed relationship with Krishna and I feel happy in my relationship with Krishna and I want others also to be similarly happy and that's why I share Krishna consciousness with others. Then what is happening is I have internal success and I want to share that with others. So if our desire to preach is based on that, then our external success is indeed a reflector of internal success. But sometimes, actually, to get the higher taste of Krishna consciousness requires surrender, requires commitment, requires humility, requires tolerance. And if that is too difficult, then we may take a shortcut. What is the shortcut? Yes, I need happiness somewhere. So I'm not getting happiness in my relationship with Krishna, but then I will get happiness in faith. And I work very hard for my preaching, I work very hard for my services, and when others glorify me, that is the taste that I am getting. So, if my external success is a substitute for my internal success, then that is extremely unfortunate. That is extremely dangerous. Now, in general for us, both will go together. If Prabhupada taught us that it is not that we have to wait to become internally successful and then we have to go for external success. Prabhupada taught us that our sadhana is important, but our preaching is also a part of our sadhana. Our preaching is also a part of our sadhana. We develop our relationship with Krishna by sharing our relationship with Krishna. So it's not that we have become happy in our Krishna consciousness. Yes, there surely we are happier than we were before. But we also have our struggles. But we do preaching as a service. But if we start doing preaching or we start doing any other services, maybe managing, counseling, whatever it is, maybe, if we start doing that and we think, okay, the happiness through this is what I am looking for in life, and we don't bother about our relationship, then that is unfortunate. Sometimes it happens that some devotees think, okay, I want to build this big temple for Krishna. And they work very hard to build a temple. But in the name of building the temple, Or in the name of, I want to distribute books. So in the name of distributing the books, I don't have time to wake up in the morning. I have to work till late night. And then I chance my rounds, somehow struggling sometime along the way. And I don't have any time to read. I work so much to read. So what is happening? I develop a relationship with the temple, but I lose my relationship with Krishna. How can that happen? Because karta hamti manyate. I build the temple, I distribute the books. Therefore, this verse is very profound. What this verse is telling us is that don't let the external result distract you from the internal world. Now, for a karma yogi, he is not yet aware of Krishna. But what he is aware is, I am not the body, I am the soul. So, by doing that activity with detachment, he will grow in the awareness that I am the Atma. So for him, he will grow in knowledge. That's what I wrote earlier. We grow in wisdom and we grow in devotion. The karma yogis, by doing action and detachment, they will grow in wisdom. And we as devotees, we will grow in wisdom also, but we will grow in devotion also. This is actually the import of this verse. So that certainly we have to be concerned about the result. If we are concerned about the result because it is to be offered to Krishna. And therefore, our concern is more for Krishna than for the result. Our concern is surely for the result. But it is more for Krishna than for the result. So if I have done my part and still the result is not coming, and then I get irritable and I start shouting at everyone, and I blow up everything around me, and then I get the thing done. But then what is happening? Where am I? Please, Krishna, I have heard his devotees. I have maybe created a bad perception about how devotees behave. I don't please Krishna like that. Therefore, we don't let the external success distract us from the internal success. Any questions? Yeah? A little loudly. Can something be closed? That window? Yeah, sometimes devotees get external success.
Maybe external success is a big spot, especially when you're preaching. So the difficult thing is about the different things.
Good difference. Okay, yeah.
Fame comes, follows that. The spot it happens very fast. You join ashram, you start preaching. So it comes very fast. And it's yet not mature to take that.
When he comes?
Premature guru. It will be dangerous. In one sense, preaching is a part of sadhana. You still doubt that should I go out and do it? Because sometimes what happens is that you feel that I am preaching for my own ego, so that I can follow it. Creates a disturbance. Am I doing it for myself or for Krishna?
See, if we have some doubts whether I am doing it for Krishna or for my own ego, the only solution is to do it. By not doing it, the ego is not going to go away. The ego is a disease. And the cure for the disease of the ego is devotional service. So if I do a service, I become proud. If I don't do a service, I become envious of those who are doing the service. So where is the way out? The only way out is for purification. And purification will come by rendering service. So the important thing is, when we are doing services, we are well connected with our seniors. Generally, when we take up leadership in a service, then what happens? We get connected with our equals and our juniors. And that often leads us to an inflated conception of ourselves. So if we are well connected with our seniors, then we don't have so much to worry about, because they will guide us, they will protect us. And they will tell us when some things are going wrong, and we have to take care of this. So of course, one is connection with our seniors, and another is our connection with Krishna. We need to do our sadhana properly, we need to do our swadhyaya properly. And then, Krishna will also guide the yoga, the 10-pointed, he will also guide us. But the not taking initiative is not Srila Prabhupada's way of doing things. Very rarely did Srila Prabhupada tell a devotee, you are getting proud, don't do this service. in extreme situations he might have done that. But very rarely. Generally, what Srila Prabhupada would do is, he would give the devotee proper philosophical instruction and go out and do service. And sometimes, if we try doing the top service, actually speaking, how bhakti works is, and when we try doing the top service, we find that I can't do it. I try it, and then I can't do it. Then that forces also to become humble. That forces also to take shelter of Krishna. And just by not doing service, what is going to happen? Okay, I don't become proud. But then I struggle to do a service, and then I realize I can't do it. And then I pray to Krishna, and then I'm able to do it. Then not only am I saved from pride, but I'm also increasing my faith in Krishna. And that increase of faith in Krishna would not happen if I don't take up initiative. Therefore, we need to take up initiative. And if we keep our connection with Krishna and our connection with our seniors strong, then we will be protected from that. Yes, Mishra. Thousands of disciples. Okay. So now, good question. So we discussed now there is A and there is B. A is spiritual advancement. B is effect success in preaching. So now success in preaching does not necessarily mean A is present. Right? One has spiritually advanced. So now that is one part. Now you are asking about the second part. If A is present, is it possible that B may not be present at all? There is spiritual advancement, but there is no success in preaching. Is it possible? Yes. The whole concept of Bhajnanandi is that itself. Bhajnanandi is that itself, that one doesn't feel the need to preach. So now, I have asked different senior Vaishnavas, why these Bhajnanandis don't feel like preaching? So I have got different answers. So one senior Vaishnava told me, they are so disappointed with the human race that they feel no potential for the human race to be reformed. Another Vaishnava told me that actually they are so advanced that they don't see anybody as a non-devotee. They don't see anybody as a non-devotee. They are completely absorbed in Krishna and they just, the other world doesn't exist for them. And the other answer I gave, if you look at Gaurakishore Babaji's behavior, he was not in the second stage. You know, he was so sharp in cutting people, in checking people's hypocrisy. He might have been in the stage where the world was oblivious to him. But whenever he interacted with the world, he cut through people's facades. Now somebody will say, why don't you come to Calcutta and stay with me? And you know, he says, if you want me, you should come and stay. Renounce your home, renounce your family, come and stay here. And we'll do bhajan together. So he would cut through cut through hypocrisy. One time a couple came and took his blessings. So he, when that man came and he said, please give me some instructions. He says, only one instruction. Remember, your wife is not your dasi, she's Krishna dasi. So it was not that he was oblivious to the world. So then what could be the cause for them to not preach? So the understanding that I got is that actually Krishna inspires them in that way. Krishna inspires them to behave in a particular way. And that is the way that they are pleasing Krishna. Now actually speaking, we cannot say that Vaishnava Babaji did not preach. Now what all the other Vaishnavas in Mayapur could not do, that they did to Bhaktisiddhanta, that Vaishnava Babaji did to Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. Now Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he had a Vaishnava relationship with his father, but he wanted to see living dedicated Vaishnavas in the renounced world, and he did not see anyone till he saw Bhaktisiddhanta. So through his actions he was preaching. So even the great sannyasi, the Vaishnavas are also preaching through their actions. But in general, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, as well as Bhaktivinoda Thakur, their focus was more on Goshtyanandi Vichy. So that's why in that context, you're saying that maybe Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the whole song, Nirjana Bhajam, Dushtamant Vikishera Vaishnava. We focus on that for us in Kali Yuga, especially the 19th-20th century onwards Kali Yuga. Earlier also was Kali Yuga, but now the modern Kali Yuga is there. It is the Nirjana Bhajan is very difficult. So therefore, he says, focus on preaching. That's it. So it's possible, surely, some people can be very advanced and not have any followers. But that is not the mood in our line within the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Any other questions? Yeah.
This question also needs to be answered. Is our definition of preaching limited? Because we see preaching as only as an activity to ground, like, to so many followers. Like, Radhika Ramanthu gave this example that it was Jambuan who inspired Hanuman to realize potential in that what he failed to. Similarly, like, even inspire one because there are many other activities, you know, by which you can preach.
Correct. So, is our definition of preaching limited? See, different words have different definitions. So, there is a narrow definition, there is a standard definition, and there is a liberal definition. So standard, our standard definition, generally think of preaching means speaking about Krishna, isn't it? That's what we think of as preaching. Either I am giving classes or I am distributing books and that I am preaching about Krishna. So that's what we generally think of as preaching, speaking about Krishna. That's the standard definition. Now, the narrow definition when speaking about Krishna to new people. That would be the definition of preaching in a narrow sense. But in a broad sense, and when we are using the word liberal, it's not in a. Maybe I'll use the word broad over here, because the word liberal sometimes has slightly negative connotation. Broad means any activity that inspires a soul to come closer to Krishna. That is preaching, in the broadest sense. And this soul is, this soul may be a non-devotee, soul may be a devotee also. Even devotees have to move closer to Krishna. So any activity that inspires the soul to come closer to Krishna, that is preaching. And if you want to take this further, any activity that removes an obstacle between a soul and Krishna, that is also preaching. What does this mean? For example, Ashla Prabhupada wanted Darwin's theory of evolution refuted. And Prabhupada said, the more you refute Darwin, the more you make spiritual advancement. The explicit quote of Prabhupada like that. Now what do you do? This? Refuting Darwin, what to do with making spiritual advancement? Like there's an even more extreme quote. Prabhupada said, the more you kick on the face of Darwin, the more you make spiritual advancement. So Duttakarma goes to me, what does it mean, kick on the face? He says, now Darwin is buried outside of London. So I go on his grave and kick over there. Will that lead to spiritual advancement? Not exactly. Kick on the face means what has come out of his faces? Nonsense that is taking people away from Krishna. So you refute that nonsense. So now this itself may not bring people closer to Krishna, but it will remove a major obstacle on the path of people to Krishna. That is also preaching. And so generally speaking, we talk about preaching in the standard sense. So the liberal definition is also true. And the Goshtyanandi and the Bhajanandis, from the liberal point of view, they are surely preaching. Okay. This is the last question.
So he asked like it's about the mature and premature time. So like if you one is like in our level, we want to teach someone and we have not sufficient knowledge and we defeat by And we can think that okay, what they are giving the reason, that is correct. So we can create some doubt, of course, on our Krishna consciousness also. To what they are doing, that is a good way, and we can also deviate from our things. So that's why, as I heard that the understanding one is not mature enough to preach outside, he should not go and preach others. Otherwise, he can have confusion about his philosophy.
Correct. So the question is that sometimes if we go to preach and other people speak their own philosophies, then our faith may get weakened and we may get confused. So therefore, unless we are mature, we should not preach. Is that correct? It again depends on to whom we are preaching. It depends on to whom we are preaching. If we are preaching to common people, see, Kalau Shudra Sambhava. Most people in Kali Yuga are Shudras. And that is the great good fortune of the preacher.
With all due respect to the people also, you're not disrespecting them yet.
But the point is, Kali Yuga people don't know anything. And even an average ISKCON devotee, he has answers to most of the standard questions of people. Even just by being 1 or 2 years in the movement, the devotee has those answers. So in that sense, actually, surely we can preach. But especially if somebody is rooted in some conceptions. So now, see, preaching is like a war. And the war has to be fought on fronts and with opponents where we can win. If I am a foot soldier, I cannot fight with the elephant warrior. I'll get crushed completely. But that doesn't mean I should not fight. I can fight with the foot soldier. Isn't it? So like that, say if now we can refute Darwin's theory of evolution by giving some simple arguments. Now that is fine. Most, that is enough for most people. You know, sometimes we give a scientific class and we say, if our children are told in their schools that they are coming from monkeys, then naturally they will behave like monkeys, isn't it? Talia, 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 people are like, Darwin's theory is nonsense. And that's what most people need. But the scientist who studies the theory of evolution, he will come with all sorts of arguments. Now he may make us seem like a fool. That doesn't mean that we are foolish, but just that he is better equipped. So, you know, if an elephant warrior comes from that side, then we have to get Uttakarma Prabhu from our side. An elephant warrior from our side. You know? So, the battle has to be between equals. So, like that, we have a particular level at which we can fight. And as we become more and more experienced, we can fight at higher levels. So, especially if we find that some person is quite well-read and well-informed, it's best to connect that with some person, some other senior devotee. But that doesn't mean that we have to stop, we should never fight the war till we become elephant warrior. That's not like that. We can fight right now, but at our level. Okay? So, we discussed quite an important concept, although we went through only one verse today. We're supposed to stop at 6:30, isn't it? Or 6:30? Okay, so it's an important concept, and in fact, this will inform the full third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is Karma Yoga. So, although we covered one verse, I hope we have covered sufficient ground today. Thank you very much. Shrimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaura Premananda ki jai. Thank you very much.